There's a place out on the edge of town, sir, rising above the factories and the fields. Ever since I was a child, I can't remember the mansion on the hill.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Janet Wallach, who is the author of 9 books, including Desert Queen, The Extraordinary Life of Gertrude Bell, a frequent contributor to the Washington Post magazine and the Smithsonian magazine. She has written cover stories on leading Middle East personalities, and she co-hosted a nationally syndicated program, Private Lives, Public People, on the Lifetime Cable Network. Janet Wallach is a founding director and president emeritus of Seeds of Peace, a nonprofit organization created by her late husband, John Wallach, which received a UNESCO Peace Prize in 2000. Her new book just out is The Richest Woman in America, Hetty Green in the Gilded Age. Welcome to Background Briefing, Janet Wallach.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
And it seems that your specialty here, Janet, in apart from the enormous amount of work you've done on the Middle East and the personalities in the Middle East, has been to sort of uncover these interesting women who history has not really appreciated or understood. Is that a fair description of Hetty Green?
Yes, it is. Women who have really made a mark and done some interesting things, and I think it's a pity that they're not well known. They deserve to be known. And so, yes, it's been a great adventure for me discovering and doing research and letting people know about these fascinating women.
And in the case of Hetty Green, who died in 1916, at that time, she was worth $100 million, which is equal to about $2 billion today. She, of course, has been somewhat maligned by history, referred to as the Witch of Wall Street or the world's greatest miser. But you've painted an extremely deep and complex picture. So let's start with the context here, because many have argued, and I think fairly correctly, that we are in a kind of new Gilded Age. And so what was the significance? Was that your hook into exploring her, the sense that her experience might resonate to what's happening today with the 99% versus the 1%?
You're absolutely right, Ian. In fact, when a friend of mine first suggested her name as a subject about 6 years ago, I said, "Who?" I'd never heard of her. I heard those awful titles of Witch of Wall Street and Greatest Miser and so on. And then I started doing some research and looking into her, and discovered that this was a woman who not only really was victorious over enormous financial crises in her time, and that these things happen every 20 years or so. We seem to go through these cycles of up into the stratosphere in terms of spending and borrowing, and then comes the great crash, and then there are years of suffering, and then we do it all over again. So I thought, this is not only interesting, this is a relevant story to tell, and I think it is, and I think we can learn something from the way she approached it and the way others did too.
So, continuing the contemporary analogies, how much is she like, for example, Warren Buffett?
I think she was quite similar. I mean, I kind of think of her as the 19th century female Warren Buffett. She had a very unemotional approach to investing. She did her homework. She studied her companies. She knew them inside out and upside down in terms of their financial insides. And she was very cool-headed. so that in a panic, when everybody was selling, she would be buying. And when everybody was buying in a frenzy, she would be selling. She knew when it was time to get in and when it was time to get out. And that doesn't mean necessarily getting in at the very bottom and getting out at the very top. But it does mean being aware of these cyclical patterns and being aware of the madness of crowds, if you will.
Well, of course, many have argued that we are becoming, our democracy is turning into a kind of rule by an oligarchy, and our economy has become a plutonomy, again, harking back to the Gilded Age. And I suppose in that context, Buffett is somewhat on the side of the angels, if you compare him to, say, to the Koch brothers, who are kind of the Darth Vaders of capitalism today.
I'm with you.
So tell me, my understanding of Hetty from your book, again, The Richest Woman in America, Hetty Green in the Gilded Age, Janet Wallach, is that she is a politically somewhat, on the liberal side. She had compassion for the poor, or the 47%. And she, even though she was frugal in her own ways, she seems to also be fairly generous, at least in terms of her spirit. And she comes out of this extraordinary Quaker heritage.
Well, that's right, which set up a kind of split personality, I would say. You know, when she was a child, her family wanted to make sure that she wasn't spoiled, and they were a family of some money. But to make sure that she wasn't spoiled, they sent her to a Quaker boarding school, where thrift was an important message. Where she practically had to eat mush every day, and if she didn't eat what was put in front of her, it was put back for the next meal until she finished it. And she also encountered a number of classmates who came from poor backgrounds, and her tuition at the school helped to pay for their education. So she was really helping to scholarship them, and she developed an empathy for others who did not have money. And she, all through her life, she appreciated people who appreciated her. She was wary of those who befriended her for her money, and I think it's wonderful. Well, somebody asked her why she was so affectionate towards her dog, and she said, "Because he doesn't know how rich I am." And I think that was a good part of it. But she did have empathy, although I have to confess, on the other hand, she did not like to pay taxes, and she avoided them at all costs. So there was that side of her, too.
Well, but that's a fine and distinguished American tradition. And the only difference...
Not only American, right? Right. We're now finding out.
Right. But
all over the world.
Exactly. Right. The difference being, of course, that we live with the delusion that we're overtaxed when we're one of the least taxed countries in the industrial world.
Right.
Again, I'm speaking with Janet Wallach, who's the author of 9 books, including Desert Queen, The Extraordinary Life of Gertrude Bell. Her latest book just out is The Richest Woman in America, Hetty Green in the Gilded Age. So just returning to the Quaker heritage, it's extraordinary to think how the small American religion, well, of course, it came from Europe originally, but it flourished here. Nevertheless, it's always been very small in number, but enormously great in its impact. Quakers have been at the forefront of the great historical movement, the emancipation, the women's suffragette movement, the civil rights movement, the nuclear freeze movement, the environmental movement. All of these great movements, if you scratch the surface a little bit, you find that the key people behind them were Quakers. I just find that extraordinary.
I think so. I would certainly agree with you. Well, they had a wonderful outlook in terms of conflict resolution. They believed in peaceful settlement. They believed they were not in favor of going to war. And it's interesting, however, that they supported the Civil War because they felt that they had to fight to free the slaves. So in that sense, war was almost inevitable. But yes, they have been at the forefront, and I think that again, influenced Hetty Green's thinking, that she saw people in a different way than maybe others did, that she was open to everybody. Everybody. She did not have biases against those who were poor or those who were working people. She was absolutely accepting of all. And in fact, unlike the great industrialists of her day, she didn't take advantage of people to make her money. She did it on her own. She never tried to get other people to invest their money with her. She did not use workers were at low wages. None of that. She was very fair in her investing and in her employment of people.
So her reputation of being parsimonious and the notion that she carried $200,000 worth of bonds on a public bus and when she could have hired a private carriage. How much of that is exaggerated? Because I know, for example, she tried to marry off her mousy daughter and was quite lavish in terms of throwing parties and stuff. So she wasn't. So did she deserve this reputation of being a miser?
I think she certainly was frugal, very careful with her money. But then again, she was not just a Quaker; she was a New Englander, and so that was very much in the manner of New England ways to be extremely thrifty with their pennies. She may have taken it to an extreme. She was told from the time she was a young child that the money that she had was her responsibility to protect, to increase, and to pass on to the next generation. And she really saw that as her job, her tremendous responsibility. And so she was 1,000% business and really didn't care about where she lived or what her clothing looked like. She was far more interested in being successful in her investing, which is, I think, kind of interesting. She did take it to kind of an extreme. She lived in small apartments. She lived in boarding houses, which were not as bad as they sound. Boarding houses in her time could be very comfortable places with professional people living there in the other suites, other rooms. So, but she was extremely cautious with her money, and I think her children, particularly her son, went the other way just because he had been brought up with such miserliness.
Well, but she's such a contrast, given that as I mentioned earlier, at the time of her death in 1916, she was worth at least $100 million, which is more than $2 billion in today's dollars. And what we see of her contemporaries today, the billionaires in America, so many of them appear to be. A lot of them believe that they're actually afflicted and that they're misunderstood. There's an interesting article in the New Yorker about that at the moment by Chrystia Freeland. There's also this extraordinary competition where they can't wait to have a bigger mansion in the Hamptons and a bigger Gulfstream jet. So she had no part of the trappings of the Gilded Age.
She absolutely shunned it, and it was certainly the same sort of competitive atmosphere then that we see today. Newport was filled with marble mansions, and the houses that were built in New York at the time, these Beaux-Arts mansions. In fact, I'm looking at one right now across the street from me, a Gothic mansion that was built in the Gilded Age that has every kind of icing on the cake that you could possibly imagine. This was not Hetty's style. She came from a background where simplicity, where plainness was respected far more than the froth. And that is how she lived. But certainly imagine the lavishness in the Gilded Age, the homes, the furnishings, the clothes, the cars when they came into style. all of it was just spectacular, really. And I think that in some ways, Hetty Green was resented because she didn't spend her money that way. She didn't want to live that way. And for many people, it's okay for others to make a fortune as long as they can relish the spending of it. But if somebody's going to make a lot of money and then hoard it, it doesn't quite seem fair. And I think that's what happened with Hetty. She did not allow the public the vicarious pleasure of enjoying her money. And I think that a lot of the bad press that she received came out of that attitude.
Again, I'm speaking with Janet Wallach, the author of the new book just out, The Richest Woman in America, Hetty Green in the Gilded Age. Now, she spent time in England married to Edward Green, who was apparently a fairly successful businessman, and signed a prenuptial agreement. Was that his idea? I mean, that was a bad move on his part, right?
It was her father's idea.
I see.
Yes, he would not give his approval for the marriage unless Edward signed that agreement. And the agreement said that the couple would have to live on her husband's income and that her money was to be hers to protect, increase, and pass on to her children. And that's exactly what happened until he crossed the red line.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, what happened was Hetty was really an investor. She bought for the long haul. Edward was much more of a gambler and a risk taker, and he put his money into stocks that started tumbling. And when they did, and he was called, and he had bought them, of course, on margin, deep margin. When he was called for more cash, he used his wife's money, Hetty Green's money, as collateral. And when the stocks crashed and the bank called and said, okay, Mrs. Green, you have to pay, she was just wild. That was going, well, he had broken his promise. And so she sent him packing. She paid, but she sent him packing.
Well, she had to pay, right?
Yes.
It was a margin call. Right?
Yes.
But this is a woman who'd established a lifelong principle of never borrowing, and that had to be the worst kind of insult to her.
That's right.
So just in closing then, again, back to the contemporary period, the new Gilded Age that we're in, we actually have an exemplar of the 1% running for president of the United States, and he may well get elected. So it's conceivable that we will go further into the equivalent of the new Gilded Age. What's the lesson for readers of your book to take, Janet Wallach?
I think, you know, Hetty always said common sense was the most precious commodity that one could have. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to use our common sense when we're looking at the times that it just doesn't make sense that 1% of the population should have the kind of wealth that it does. And at some point, the pendulum has to go the other way. But also, to keep a cool head in times of panic or in times of frenzied speculation, avoid risk. And that was her most important message, I think, along with common sense. And common sense says, don't take enormous risks because there is an upside, but there is a huge downside. So if you invest wisely, know what you're doing, know your companies, do it for the long haul, and don't do it on margin, then even if the stocks go down, if they're solid companies, or if the real estate goes down, if they're solid properties, they will come back. We do always come back in this country. We have enormous resources, and you will be okay. But you just have to keep your calm, keep your cool, and stand aside while the others go mad and run around in circles of panic and fear.
Well, Janet Wallach, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Janet Wallach, who's the author of 9 books, including Desert Queen, The Extraordinary Life of Gertrude Bell, a frequent contributor to The Washington Post magazine and The Smithsonian magazine. She has written cover stories on leading Middle Eastern personalities and has co-hosted a nationally syndicated program, Private Lives, Public People, on the Lifetime Cable Network. Janet Wallach is the founding director and president emeritus of Seeds of Peace, a nonprofit organization created by her late husband, John Wallach, which received a UNESCO Peace Prize in 2000. Her new book just out is The Richest Woman in America, Hetty Green in the Gilded Age. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Michelle Manas and Tariq Mohammed. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Time.